Well, once again, we're here in Snohomish, Washington. It's August 27th, 1991, and we're talking with Lonnie Fry. We spoke a little bit about your career, your own career. Who was the greatest influence over you? Or who had the greatest influence on you in your baseball career?
You mean after I got into baseball or mm-hmm. before?
Either, or both.
I had such a strong desire to play ball when I was a little kid, because I lived in St. Louis, went out to the ballpark, the Cardinals games, whenever I could, and I idolized those guys so much that it just grew from there. I just wanted to play ball, and I did everything in my younger years to develop myself, make myself strong enough, so I thought if I ever got a chance to play ball, even around home, I wanted to be able to play ball with amateur teams, and I had to do something to build myself up, which I did. And even though I didn't put on a lot of weight, I thought I was strong enough to make it in professional baseball. So finally, after we won, this national championship, this friend of mine asked me if I want to go away, and that's how it started.
Any particular players you remember watching when you were growing up?
Oh, I remember every one of those Cardinal ball players. Jeez. Chick Hafey, Wild Bill Hallahan, that big left, wild left-handed pitcher. He'd walk three guys and strike out three guys, just like clockwork. And Ernie Arsatti, Frankie Frisch, Rogers Hornsby, Jim Bottomley, Charlie Galbert, shortstop, great shortstop. They had Taylor Dowd hitting the outfield. Of course, Chick Hafey I mentioned. And catcher, we had Bob O'Farrell. Pitchers were, like I said, Hallahan, Jesse Haynes. Derringer came on about 28 as a young kid, and they had a few other guys. I can't quite remember who they were, but they had some good ball clubs.
What about after you broke in, after you started playing professional ball? Who had most influence on you?
I would say Charlie Dressen. He managed the Nashville Ball Club the second year I played pro ball, and he was a great influence on me. He gave me so many little tips. He played third base, still played, and I was a shortstop, and he helped me out quite a bit. And from there on, of course, I got lots of help in Brooklyn and so on and so forth.
Anybody specific that you remember, a coach or another player?
Yeah, some of the players on the Brooklyn Ball Club, the old-timers that were hanging around there and trying to get another year in on their career. Danny Taylor and, like I said, Hack Wilson, Jill Stripp. See, we had a guy by the name of Jordan. Jimmy Jordan played shortstop. He helped me. And Tony Cusinello played second base alongside of me when I played short. All big influences on my career, that's for sure.
You played second base and shortstop, as we said. What were the toughest plays for you to handle? Any ones that stick out in your mind?
I think for an infielder, the hardest play is a slow roller that gets past the pitcher, and you've got to, any way you can, make the play any way at all. And that, to me, has been the hardest play. And you see it today. They still have a tough time making that play. But other than that, I don't think I had too much of a problem. Bad hops, of course.
Well, what were some of the, you talk about bad hops, what, any particular fields that you played on stick out in your mind? You played in Evansville?
The Cardinals, St. Louis. They had a brickyard. We used to call it the brickyard. I don't know what kind of dirt they had in there, but I understand that it was old clay that they used somewhere, I don't know, and they brought it in and put it on that infield. And when it was wet and the sun came out and baked it, it was just like a rock. And then when you dig into it with your spikes, you leave a hole, and that the dirt around the hole was hard. So a ball hit that, and it just liable to go anywhere. But that was really a bad infield. That was the worst one I ever played on.
You played in Ebbets and Shy Park.
Ebbets field wasn't too bad. Let's see. Shy Park. No, the rest of them are all fairly good. Well taken care of. That's St. Louis infield. My favorite ballpark was Baker Bowl in Philadelphia. You never heard of that.
Yeah, I did.
Did you? Short right field. But all the background was so beautiful, big green backgrounds, and you could see a ball just, Ernie Lombardi and I, they couldn't get us out over there. In fact, I had one day over there, I had an 8-for-8 in a doubleheader. And, I mean, they're unusual days, you know, every ball player has them. But that was a rare one for me, it happened to be in Baker Bowl.
Particular cities that you enjoyed visiting more than others?
We never saw much of the city. We'd get to the hotel and go to the ballpark, and that was it. Maybe go to a movie. But we never had time. See, we played in the afternoons.
No,
most all afternoons, and that was, you didn't have time to check around all the different towns. But I liked, other than that, I liked, let's see, I like New York pretty well. Chicago. I like Chicago.
New York, of course, being the polo ground.
Yeah, and the polo grounds. And Boston, I didn't care much about. They had a slow infield. You couldn't drive a ball through that infield on the grass. It was just that Casey Stengel was managing up there. We played up there. And he kept that grass high. So it was really tough.
How did the fans compare to the different ballparks? I mean, were there as much differences in the crowds as?
Yeah. There was a big difference in Boston in those days. You'd be out there in the field, and you wouldn't hear the stand. There'd nobody in the stand making any noise, unless something real rare happened. You'd know they were there. That was in the old Boston Braves field. Let's see. What they call it? Braves Field, I think they call it. Yeah, Braves Field.
And of course, you played against Ruth then.
Babe Ruth, yeah. Babe Ruth, saw him a few times. But he never played a whole lot in those years. It's a figurehead, more or less, mm-hmm. on some of those ball clubs, pinch hit, so on and so forth. But I remember the Babe hit 3 home runs in 1 game in Pittsburgh. I read about this. I didn't see it. The last days he played, he had 3 home runs in that 1 game. And they say that each one he hit was farther than the first one. So that was the day he should have quit.
Ever been in a triple play?
Those things escaped my mind. I can't remember.
No hitter?
Oh, yeah. I was in, played in Johnny Vandermeer's 2 no-hitters.
Right.
And we were no-hit by Tex Carlton in Cincinnati. And we hit, must have hit 29 line drives off of him. None of them fell safe. He pitched a no-hitter, believe it or not. We couldn't believe it. Let's see. It seemed to me there was another one or two that... Oh, I can't remember.
What was it like when Vandermeer was going for the second one? I mean, that was the first night game, right?
Yeah, in Brooklyn, yeah. And that was, it was tough because Vandy was wild. He was walking guys right and left. And we got down to the ninth inning, and DeRocher realized, of course he realized before that, but then he said, I'm going to break this no-hitter up. He went up, pinch hit, and made the last out. Flew out, soft fly to center field. And it was amazing. But listen, you know what? He came close to pitching three no-hitters in a row. From Brooklyn, we went up to Boston. And he had gone at least three or maybe four innings when Debs Gorms, a pretty good hitter, a left-hander, hit a clean base hit to left center field. He rounded first base and got to second, and McCormick said he didn't touch first base. So he called for the ball and touched the bag, and he was out. He's still a no-hitter going. And that went on for about four innings. And we thought, geez, this guy's going to pitch another no-hitter, you know. Couldn't believe it. And but eventually, it was about the fourth, late in the fourth inning or fifth inning, and somebody got the base hit, and they got a few base hits off of it. That was really something.
This was a day game?
This was a day game, yeah.
What was it like playing at night for the first time?
Pretty unusual. See, we played a few night games in Cincinnati. First place they had the lights. When they first put them up, they'd only play seven games a year. And, of course, each year they went along, they increased it to 14 and so on and so forth. But it was kind of interesting. I enjoyed it for a change. You only get out of that hot sun.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a relief.
Have a tough time picking up the ball?
The lights were good. Yeah, the lights were really good. Well, I don't think anybody really had that problem. The minor leagues, it was tough. I mean, the lights were very poor. But they put up some good lights. Cincinnati, of course, I think. Brooklyn had better lights than Cincinnati. Cincinnati had the big old shades, you know. They didn't have the individual spotlights. And they weren't quite as bright. But it wasn't bad.
Any particular plays from your career that you remember, humorous things that happened on the field?
Oh, you should have asked me this question some time ago so I had time to think about them. I think we better come back to that.
Ever got thrown out of a game? That one I asked you before.
Yeah, well, I can't recall being thrown out of a game, but I remember one game when I should have been thrown out of a game, and I didn't get. We were playing in St. Louis, and I hit a ball off of the right field roof, bounced back onto the field, and the right fielder threw the ball to second base, and nobody was at second base to receive the ball. And I went into second base standing up, and the umpire called me out. Yeah, from right, he went out to right field to see where the ball was going to hit on the roof. If it hit a certain place up there, it was a home run. But it hit just below that spot, and it was in play. And he called me out from right field. Never saw the play, and he called me out. Big old Major Curtin. He was my friend, too. He and I used to get along fine. And, I charged him and pushed him all around and argued with him, and everybody else was arguing with him. And he never changed his mind. He wouldn't ask any help for any help. That was the closest I think I came to being thrown out of the ball game. I should have been the way I was hollering and yelling and pushing him.
Any particular umpires that you remember?
Bill Clem, number one in my book. He was a great umpire. You could take a pitch and, you know, he was going to call it the way you thought it should have been called. Oh, he was in my book, is great. Oh, we had a lot of good umpires. I can't remember all their names, but we had, other than Bill Clem, oh, shoot, I can't remember their names. Great umpires. I don't think there was one umpire that I really disliked for any reason at all. They all seemed to do a good job, as far as I was concerned, anyway.
What was the press like in those days? traveled on the train.
Yeah, they travel the trains. I remember when I played with Cincinnati, we would be back east somewhere, New York, Boston, wherever, Pittsburgh, and there'd be stories in the paper at home that we don't know how they got there. The reporter was never around talking to anybody. Now, where he got his information, nobody knows. But the stories were in the paper the next morning. Never did find out. We suspicioned a couple of guys, but never could prove anything.
Anything happened to you personally?
You mean...
As far as the press was concerned?
No, not really.
What about training facilities and trainers in general?
We had a good trainer in Cincinnati, Doc Rohde. Very good, very conscientious. Young fella. He was the best one, I think, that I ran across that knew pretty much what he was doing.
But it certainly wasn't like today where...
Oh, no, no, no. I don't know what it's like today, but I can imagine. They got their rooms filled with all kinds of equipment.
And you played no matter what.
That's right, yeah. The one thing I think that changed, I don't know what caused it or what is causing it, but there are more injuries today than there were in those days. The only time we really had a lot of injuries was from spring training on into maybe the first couple of weeks. The guys weren't really in too good a shape, and it was cold. Come up north and play in the colder weather, and guys would get sore arms or sore legs or something like that, but as time went on, they seemed to get over that, and had very, very few sore arms, mm-hmm. or legs especially, because the guys always ran. Pitchers did a lot of running in the outfield before a game. But I just can't figure it out. I can't figure out why these guys are on, so many of them are on 15-day disabled list. I don't know what it is. Of course, when you're not in there, you don't realize what's going on. But there are a lot of guys getting crazy injuries.
Kept in shape during the offseason. What did you use to
pretty
do
much.
During the off?
I used to run, play handball, a few things like that, get outside, work outside. There wasn't much you could do, really. I lived in St. Louis in the winter, and about all you could do was go out and exercise, go outside and run. Played a lot of handball. I loved to play handball, soccer, played a lot of soccer. Kept exercising somehow, but there's always some ways you could move around and keep yourself in pretty good shape.
If you could have been a manager, let's say in the mid-30s, early 40s, when you were in your prime, who, if we go around the field, who would have been the players you would have picked to start your team?
My number one man would be Pete Reeser. That poor guy, he had so much tough luck, running into so many walls. There's a man that had more natural ability than anybody I ever saw. He could steal a base anytime he wanted to. He could hit for an average. He could throw you out. He could beat you every way it's possible to beat you on a baseball field. Himself. Just amazing guy. Let's see. Pete Reeser. Oh gosh, that would be tough. Starting with him. And pitchers. There's so many good pitchers. And infielders. It'd be almost impossible to pick one team and say, well, this team's never going to get beat. You know. Because there's still a lot of ball players left.
What about a manager?
I think McKechnie. I think I'd Duchesne, DeRocher would be my first choices from what I've experienced.
Did you have a lot of dealings with the front office general managers?
They were tough. It was tough dealing with them, you know. It really was. We never had the agents, you know, they got today. That's the number one advantage that ball players have today. They don't have to go to the front office. Usually don't. Very few of them will go up on their own. It was really rough.
Who was the general manager in Cincinnati?
Giles. Warren Giles. He was no pushover. Everybody had problems with them. They didn't have problems, but they just couldn't get anywhere with them. I mean, what are you going to do? You're stuck. You're really stuck.
Of course, there was no free agency. So
right. You were with them as long as they wanted you. You had no choice in the matter. And we all thought that was wrong, but what are you going to do? There's nothing. We never had the... I don't know what you would call it, and never had the people to go to the front for us. We were lucky to get in 1937, I was with Chicago. That was the year we got the pension thing started. And the first time we thought we had it going, it bottomed out for some reason, I don't know what, but they kept at it. They finally got it started. And it's been a great thing for the ball players, especially myself and guys in my age and our era.
Was there any talk of forming a union or anything of that nature?
No, not in those days, no. I don't know when that came on. That must have came on after flood deal. And a pitcher, there was no pitcher mixed up in that too.
Messerschmitt,
yeah. So when was that, back in the 50s or 60s? 60s. Well, they did a lot for themselves. How they pushed that through over the owners, I'll never know. God, that was remarkable.
Do you think the game has changed very much? Just the game on the field, obviously.
Yeah.
How so?
Quite a bit. Changing pitchers every time a different hitter comes up there. That's one thing I know has changed. They did a little bit of that in our day, but we never had the relief corps they have today. We had maybe one or two guys that were. Fairly young, and maybe another guy who was almost retired. You go out there and finish up a game, if you're 4 or 5 runs behind or 4 or 5 runs ahead, pitch an inning or two. But other than that, we had Joe Beggs on our ball club at Cincinnati. He was outstanding because he'd go in there with a man on first and maybe one out or no out, and we'd get a double play. He'd throw that sinker ball low outside, and we had a double play. It was that simple. He was really, really an outstanding reliever, and never too hard. Couldn't break the pane of glass, as they say, but he had that sinker working, and the hitters just couldn't do anything with it. Great pitch.
About some of the new pitchers that the pitchers come up with these days? Was it the same?
We had all those things. We had the fark ball. They call it the split finger now. Same thing. And the knuckleball. We had knuckleballers. We had some good knuckleballers in those days. The Leonard, Dutch Leonard, mm-hmm. Came up with Brooklyn when I was up there. And went to Chicago. Had some great years over there. And, there was several others that... I can't recall now, but had good knuckleball.
Spitter?
Spitters. I think Hugh Casey threw a spitter. I'm not sure, but I swear those balls did funny things. There's a few others that threw pitches that looked like they were a little illegal, but you never catch them at it.
Of course, you could throw inside in those days, right?
Yeah. I remember Van Lingle-Mungo when I was with Brooklyn. Dick Bartel, he was up there hitting, and four straight pitches, he knocked Bartel on his back. Four in a row. He walked the first base, and first pitch, of course, this is only my first year or second year with the ball club. I didn't know what Bartel from anybody else, what kind of guy he was. And I don't know what the beef Mungo had with Bartel, what that was all about. But anyway, Bartel got the first base. The first pitch, he come down to second base. He was after me. I was covering the bag on the plate. And he hit me in the knee, sprained my knee, and I was out for about 2 weeks. 2 or 3 weeks. And ever since then, I was after Bartel, and Mungo was still after him. You couldn't catch him. He was like a...
Of course, nowadays, when somebody gets brushed back, they charge the mound.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened when you were playing.
No. Mm-hmm. That wait till you come up. Then they get you. See, the pitchers hitting those days. Mm-hmm. But they usually didn't throw at the pitcher. It was either their star hitter, or best fielder, or whatever.
Any fights that you happen to remember?
Yeah. I got in a fight up in Brooklyn when I was with Cincinnati. I was on first base on a play, and ground ball hit to shortstop or third base, I'm not sure, and Cos Garrard playing second base for Brooklyn. I went down and knocked him out, and he threw the ball away, and we scored the winning run from third base on that play. And the pitcher was Whit Wyatt, and I couldn't get off the ground. Cos Garrard was all over me, and I tried to push myself up, and Pee Wee Reese, the shortstop, tried to pull him off of me. And then, of course, everybody came on the field, and Wyatt, who was a pitcher, I was laying on the ground, and he took his glove and hit me in the eye with his glove, and I went off the field holding my eye. I didn't know whether it was in or out. And one of our best pitchers, Junior Thompson, got spiked in the Achilles tendon. He was out for a while. It was just a pretty bad ruckus. But that was one of the worst fights I've been in. Of course, I didn't do anything but try to knock the guy out of the play, make the double play. But you're in a visiting home in their own ballpark, you know. You don't get away with things as easy as you do at home.
We had to take one game out of your career that you remember for one specific reason. Which game would that be?
I keep bringing up a ball game we played in Cincinnati against St. Louis late in the season. It must have been either 39 or 40. St. Louis had a good. They had Medwick, Mize, Martin, and just a great ball. Enos Slaughter. Oh, we were playing in Cincinnati, and we had a lead going into about the seventh inning, and Medwick hit a ball off the right field wall off of Paul Derringer, who was our pitcher, and he drove in two runs. I think we were leading 6-5 or 5-4. There's only one run difference. And we finally come into the ninth inning again, and here comes Martin, Medwick, and Mize up to bat. Derringer's still pitching. Derringer wound up through nine pitches. They never touched the ball, and we walked into the clubhouse on nine pitches. You should have seen him rear back and fire. That game, to me, is outstanding. Of all the games we played, I can't believe that game. We won that ball game because with those three guys coming up to hit in the ninth inning, you knew something was going to happen. They never even fouled the ball and struck it all up. And this was in the ninth inning. He already pitched eight innings. That big moose. But I tell you one thing he could do. Derringer could go along nice and slow, just pitching his ball game. Let him hit the ball, see? You always got a lot of hits off of Derringer. But when it came down to the crunch time, he had something to back it up. He could always somehow find a little extra. He was one rare pitcher, rare specimen. But you look at his record, and it's not outstanding. Because why? He pitched on the losing team in Cincinnati. They lost. He lost 27 games the year before we, McKechnie and his group came in there. Just reversed his record. Just amazing guy.
Do you think the pitching strategy has changed much?
Low outside, high inside. That's the way to pitch. Low inside, low outside, and high inside. If you can do it. I don't know whether they're throwing more change-ups and some pitchers and curveballs. They're throwing a lot of sliders now. I can only remember one pitcher that threw a slider in our days, and that was a guy with the Giants. Whether I remember his name or not. He's the only guy that threw a slider. It was a crazy pitch because it broke so quick. You couldn't follow it like a curveball. It broke in on your hand.